All right, tonight we're going to be in 2 Samuel chapters 15 and 16. This part of 2 Samuel is coming out from chapter 12. And you'll remember in chapter 12, Nathan the prophet came to David almost a year after having committed adultery with Bathsheba and having her husband killed. Nathan the prophet comes with the word of the Lord for him that he would suffer three judgments, that the sword also would not leave his home, his house, as he killed Uriah, that as he committed adultery with another man's wife, so his household, especially his wives, would be taken also in adultery by other men, and it would be done publicly, and we'll see that tonight. But also the third thing, the child that was conceived between he and Bathsheba would die. And of course, we saw that right away. That was the death of the son that was born to both David and Bathsheba. But as we saw last week in chapters 13 and 14, even though Nathan the prophet had said to David that his sins would be forgiven, because David did repent, and Nathan brought him the word that the Lord has forgiven your sins, but the consequences of your sins will remain in your household. And we saw that last week as Amnon desired his half-sister Tamar. Remember, Absalom and Tamar were brother and sister, and Amnon was a half-brother from another one of David's wives. And Amnon desired Tamar and faked being sick and seduced her into his living quarters and asked her to feed him because he was so sick. And when she did, he took her by force, humbled her, lay with her, and then afterwards threw her out of his chambers. And he hated her afterwards more than he loved her at the beginning, which is what lust will do. That isn't love. And so he called for his attendant and had her thrown out of his chambers. And that whole episode was to make her look like she was the culprit, as if he was throwing her out and she was shameful that she came to seduce him, at least for what it would look like. She went to her brother's home and found shelter there, and Absalom told his sister Tamar not to mention this to anyone, and for a few years his anger and hatred towards Amnon was kindled because of what he had done to his sister, and yet he did not speak either good nor evil to Amnon all that time that he was waiting. David the king, the father to all of these people, found out about it, and he was angry about it, but didn't do anything about it. And so as the story moves on, we see that Absalom, during the yearly shearing of the sheep, had asked David to allow Amnon and all of his sons to attend the festival, eventually allowing him to go. And David had it planned at a certain signal that he would have his servants, when Amnon was drunk at the festival, to kill him. That was his plot and plan for what Amnon had done to his sister. And of course, when that happened, Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, the king of Geshur. And so David was mourning for his son every day, and Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there for 3 years. So it says at verse 39 of chapter 13, that King David longed to go to Absalom, for he had been comforted, that is, he comforted himself concerning Amnon because he had died. But then Joab, according to chapter 14, Joab, his commander-in-chief, had been trying to encourage him to allow Absalom to come back. But he was refusing. So Joab recruited a woman from Tekoa to come, and David was still sitting in the judgment seat and was judging the various cases in Israel, and she brought a pretend case that she had two sons, both were in the field, one killed the other, the husband had died, and so the one who had committed the murder was the only one left for the inheritance, and the rest of the family members wanted to kill him, and so she said, would David provide shelter for that one son, even though he had committed murder? And David said, yes, he would. And she turned the tables on him and said, so you have done to all of Israel. You have not allowed Absalom to come back. And so the son in the narrative was David's own son that he would not allow to return because he had killed his other son Amnon for what he had done. And so he calls for Absalom to come back. He grants the request. Absalom came back, and he was a very good-looking man, very wise and shrewd. But when he came back, he was not allowed to see the face of the king. So he sent two messages to Joab saying, I want to see my father, the king. And Joab did not respond to his two requests, so Absalom had his field burned down. That got his attention. And that's the kind of character that Absalom is. He had his field burned down, and Joab came and said, why'd you do that? He says, because you weren't responding, so I thought I'd get your attention. I want to come into the presence of the king. So Joab went and told David, and so King David allowed him to come in, and when he came in, he bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. Then the king kissed Absalom. So the king and his son Absalom, who murdered his other son, are now reunited. They are now together. But this is not the end of the story. As chapter 15, verses 1 through 12, tells us of the treason, the rebellion of Absalom. It says in chapter 15, verse 1, after this it came to pass that Absalom provided himself with chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. This was an entourage of people. It would be equivalent today of having a limousine and bodyguards that made you out to be someone important. You can already see the thinking of Absalom. He was making himself somebody great, and by the time we get to verse 12, he will have taken over the entire kingdom from David. Now Absalom would rise early and stand beside the road to the gate. And so it came to pass that whenever anyone who had a lawsuit came to the king for a decision, that Absalom would call to him and say, what city are you from? And he would say, your servant is from such and such a tribe of Israel. Then Absalom would say to him, look, your case is good and right, but there is nobody to listen, no deputy of the king to hear you. There's no listener to hear you. So what he was doing was, as he was intercepting people at the gate as they were coming in from outside the city, as people were coming to get judgments from David, he would intercept them at the gate and say, look, you're going in to get judgment from the king, but there's nobody there. So tell me and I'll decide for you. As a matter of fact, I will guarantee you that I will rule in your favor. Verse 4, moreover, Absalom would say, oh, that I were made judge in the land, and everyone who has any suit or cause would come to me, then I would give him justice. And so it was, whenever anyone came near to bow down to him, that he would put out his hand and take him and kiss him. In this manner Absalom acted toward all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. And so Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. The underlying statement of this section. He stole the hearts of the children of Israel. Manipulated. Just a shrewd politician. And got the hearts of the children of Israel. Just like politicians today. You vote me in, I promise I'll do this for you. And do this for you. And do this for you. And so he did that. He stole all the hearts of the children of Israel. Now it came to pass after 40 years Now, some manuscripts have 4 years, which is probably the correct number. Now, it came to pass that after 4 years, that Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go down to Hebron and pay the vow which I made to the Lord. For your servant took a vow while I dwelt in Geshur in Syria, saying, 'If the Lord indeed brings me back to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord.' And the king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and went to Hebron." Now Hebron, remember, was the first place in which David himself was anointed king and established as king. He's the one that moved it to Jerusalem. And so what Absalom is doing now, it's been 4 years that he's been manipulating the people and stealing the hearts of the people to be towards him rather than towards his father, the king. And so now he very deceitfully asked his father, says, "Look, I made a vow that if the Lord should ever allow me to return to Jerusalem, that I would dedicate my life to serve the Lord. So let me go to Hebron and make a sacrifice and dedicate myself there." So the king just said, "Go in peace." Sounds like a fair request to me. So he arose and he went to Hebron. Then Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then you shall say, 'Absalom reigns in Hebron.' And with Absalom went 200 men invited from Jerusalem, and they went along innocently," that is, naively. They did not know what was going on and did not know anything. And so he invited 200 guests from Jerusalem to travel with him. So he sent out spies, plus he had 200 people, and he literally had them trapped. They did not know what was going on, and yet he had 200 people with him, which made it look like he had a great number of followers. It's all for appearance. And these spies would go out throughout all the tribes, and when they heard the sound of the trumpet, they would yell that Absalom reigns or rules in Hebron. So now he's got 200 there, and they don't know really what's going on. They just think that they're guests. But Absalom is using them as props. Then Absalom sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. Now, Ahithophel was one of the chief counselors to David. The king always had a council of people that counseled him and gave him their advice, much like the president today getting counsel from his cabinet and making decisions. And this was a major blow against David and in favor of Absalom, because Ahithophel was one of David's chief counselors, and he got him to rebel against David and go with him. Now, Ahithophel knew what was going on. The other 200 did not know, but Ahithophel knew. So he took David's chief counselor. So now David doesn't have counsel. And it is interesting that Ahithophel is Bathsheba's grandfather. So he has rebelled and committed treason, in a sense, against David and went over to Absalom, his son. And the conspiracy grew strong, for the people with Absalom continually increased in number. So he was continually winning people over. Now, beginning at verse 13 and going through to the end of the chapter, David's retreat from Jerusalem. We've seen the rebellion of Absalom, and now David's retreat. He hears that Absalom is about ready to come and attack the city. And so David takes his people and takes the women and children, and he leaves the city. The only way they could go is eastward toward the wilderness. Now a messenger came to David saying, "The hearts of the men," or the sons of Israel, "are with Absalom." The majority of the people, the messenger said, their hearts are for Absalom and not for you anymore. So David said to all of his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, or we shall not escape from Absalom. Make haste to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring disaster upon us and strike the city with the edge of the sword. And the king's servants said to the king, We are your servants, ready to do whatever my lord the king commands. Then the king went out with all his household after him, but the king left 10 women, concubines, to keep the house. So he left 10 behind. And the king went out with all the people after him and stopped at the outskirts of the city. Then all his servants passed before him, and all the Kerethites, all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men who had followed him from Gath, passed before the king. These would be the mercenaries. They've been with David for many years. And they passed before him, pledging their allegiance. And notice what this. Then the king said to Ittai, the Gittite, Why are you also going with us? Return and remain with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your own place. In fact, you came only yesterday. Should I make you wander up and down with us today, since I go and I don't know where I'm going? Return and take your brethren back. Mercy and truth be with you. So, yes, sir.
Is David then saying that Absalom is king?
Right. He's not giving up his kingship. He himself is acting as king. He's actually telling him to go back for the king. He, being David, being the king. This is what the king wants him to do. To go back. We will see in a moment, he's also going to send the priest back, and he's also going to send the Ark of the Covenant back to Jerusalem. So what he's actually saying to them, that for the king, meaning himself, he wants them to go back. He doesn't want them to be out there because he fears that Absalom is going to kill them. So he wants to see these people live. Go back. Take the ark back. Have all the priests go back. David also has it in mind that these people are also going to be spies for him and keep him informed. You see, David, even though he's leaving the city, he's doing it. There's only one motive for leaving the city. Actually, there's two. It also tells us that he knows that this is part of the fulfillment of the judgment that Nathan said that God was going to bring upon him. That this is the judgment for his sin. But also, the main reason, in the human sense, is that the messenger reported that the hearts of the sons of Israel have turned against him. He knows what those numbers are out there. He knows that the women and children and all the people who are inside the city are in danger because of all the rest of the children of Israel. So David slips out the east way and goes out towards the wilderness and really encourages people to go back so that they are not killed. If they're in the city and Absalom comes up and they say, David's not here, he's escaped. Well, Absalom's not going to kill the rest of the people. He wants to be king, you see. So David's actually sending Ittai back for the king, meaning himself. You see, he's king. When we get to chapter 19, he's going to come back and be Absalom doesn't. He takes over Jerusalem, but he doesn't become king. David's always the king. So, verse 21. But Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives." You see, he's acknowledging David as king. Surely in whatever place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also your servant will be. In the next chapter, we're going to see the heart of David. What a tremendous ministry it is. I don't know for you folks, I'm sure it will be, but it has been for me. But what a tremendous thing to see hard times come upon one of God's servants. And God's servants say, look, just go. Go back. This is my son rebelling against me. So you folks should not be hurt in this. This is between me and he. And we'll see that David also is doing this because he knows that he's appointed and anointed of the Lord. Therefore, in the end, David sees that he is going to be back in Jerusalem. He shows a confidence that this is going to work out for David's purpose. He's actually leaving Jerusalem to go out in the wilderness and receive reports so he can estimate exactly what is going on. He doesn't know. He figures he's a sitting duck sitting inside the city. So he's going to go out in the wilderness and receive reports until he finds out really what's going on. So that's the purpose for him getting out of there. The interesting thing about it is, in the midst of crisis, he tells people to go, and he's finding out who his friends are. Ittai, the Gittite, he's not an Israelite. He comes and he says, I'm not going back. I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to save my life. I'll die with you if I have to. You are the king. And if the king's on the run... See, David knows how to be on the run. He's telling everybody else, you go back. I know how to do this. You know. I had to run from Saul, but he wasn't running. So David says, I already know how to do this. You guys go back. Ittai says, no. We're staying with you. All the way. So David said to Ittai, go and cross over. Then Ittai the Gittite and all his men and all the little ones who were with him crossed over. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people crossed over. The king himself also crossed over the brook Kidron. And all the people crossed over towards the way of the wilderness. That would be east. And of course the brook Kidron is right outside of Jerusalem. This all happened on the outskirts of the city as the people came out and he told them to go back, and they said, no, we're crossing over. We're crossing over with you. We're not going back. We're sticking it out with you. There was Zadok. Remember, he's the priest also. And all the Levites with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God. And Abiathar, remember, he's Joab's brother, went up until all the people had finished crossing over from the city. Then the king said to Zadok, carry the Ark of God back into the city. Take it back. So David is saying God's presence belongs in Jerusalem. He's saying, I'll be back. Take the Ark back, and if I find grace in the eyes of the Lord, He will bring me back. And show me both it and its dwelling place. So basically, he's acknowledging, if the Lord has grace, I'll be back. I'll see it again. But if he says thus, I have no delight in you, here I am, let him do to me as seems good to him. Notice David's response. David says, take the ark back if it's the Lord's will. If he finds grace, then I'll be back to see it. But if not, if he's not delighted in me, and David is already submitting to the situation as part of God's judgment on him for his sins. And so he says, if God isn't, then let him do to me as he wishes. The king also said to Zadok, the priest, are you not a seer? Now a seer is somebody who can see the truth, see spiritual things. Are you not a seer? Return to the city in peace. And your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, your son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will wait in the plains of the wilderness until word comes from you to inform me. Therefore Zadok and Abiathar carried the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and they remained there. So basically, he's setting up the priests in the temple to continue the services, but they are also informants. They're also going to send messengers out to David to inform him what's going on so he can assess the situation better. So David went up by the ascent of the Mount of Olives and wept as he went up. And he had his head covered and went barefoot. And all the people who were with him covered their heads and went up, weeping as they went up. You remember what we said back in chapter 12, that the reason David fell into sin is because he began to be comfortable and take comfort in his victories and in his successes, which God had blessed him with. And now look at him. Now he's back to being a fugitive again. And He's covering his head and he's going barefoot and he's weeping. Well, it's a lot different than him taking his palace naps and walking on the roof of the palace overlooking and seeing other people's wives, you know. He's right back to where he should be. Seeking the Lord with a broken and upright heart. Verse 31. Then someone told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. And so what does David do? This is one of the things that ministers to me. He hears that his chief counselor is now over in Absalom's camp. So he just prays. Lord, let his counsel turn out to be Absalom's ruin. So he's leaving it in the hands of the Lord. Now it came to pass when David had come to the top of the mountain where he worshipped God, there was Hushai, the Archite, coming to meet him with his robe torn and dust on his head. And David said to him, If you go on with me, then you will become a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, I will be your servant, O king, as I was your father's servant previously, so I will now also be your servant, then you may defeat the counsel of Ahithophel for me. So, here comes as he comes over the mountain, Hushai, which is another counselor. He's got his robe torn, and David sees him coming whenever anybody tears his robe and he's got dust on his head. He's in mourning. He's lamenting that he has to leave the city of Jerusalem. So David sees him coming. He says, look, you're going to be a burden to me. Are you going to be crying and lamenting the whole time? You're going to be a burden to me. I tell you what, you know how you could best serve me? Go back and be a counselor in Absalom's court. And it could be that you could counter Ahithophel's counsel. And it would be more helpful for me if you went back as a loyalist to me than it would be for you to walking around with your robes torn and, you know. Verse 35, and you do not have Zadok, and do you not have Zadok and Abiathar the priest with you there? Therefore it will be that whatever you hear from the king's house, you shall tell to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Indeed they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's sons. And by them you shall send me everything you hear. So Hushai, David's friend, went into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. So he marches into Jerusalem, David's gone. No bloodshed. See, David's thinking is, it has nothing to do with pride, it has to do with people being killed, and the fact that, okay, let's say he does defeat Absalom in his attack. First of all, Absalom is his son. He doesn't want to fight him. Second of all, he doesn't want the city ruined. He has confidence in God that if he handles things this way, that there will be no bloodshed, nothing will happen to the city, and God will work it out so that he'll get back to the city now that his son has caused this against him. Now in chapter 16, we have some interesting things. First of all, when David was a little past the top of the mountain, there was Ziba. Now Ziba is the servant of Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth is the lone survivor of Saul. Remember, he's Jonathan's son, the crippled. And even though David had restored to him, he appointed Ziba to be the servant of Mephibosheth, to serve him, to be his servant. So Ziba comes, the servant of Mephibosheth, who met with him with a couple of saddled donkeys, and on them 200 loaves of bread, 100 clusters of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, What do you mean to do with these? So Ziba said, The donkeys are for the king's household to ride on, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who are faint in the wilderness to drink. Then the king said, "And where is your master's son?" And Ziba said to the king, "Indeed, he is staying in Jerusalem, for he said, 'Today the house of Israel will restore the kingdom of my father to me.'" Now, it is interesting what we're going to see in this chapter, and we're going to see another relative of Saul. Mephibosheth was in line, and David took over as king, and of course David had sons, and his sons were in line to be king. You can tell now what was in the mind of Mephibosheth all these years. Now that David is gone, Absalom is marching into the city. Mephibosheth stayed there, hoping that Absalom would say, "Mephibosheth, the throne is yours." He's been waiting all these years, even though he's been told, "You're out. Me and my family are in. There's no hope for you. I will give you the possessions of your father and Saul, your grandfather. I will give you all those possessions. I will give you a piece of land. Go and dwell in it. And I'll give you a servant and everything will be fine." Well, Mephibosheth wanted the throne. He wasn't satisfied all these years. So the servant Ziba says, "Well, the master is back in the city. He's hoping that everything's going to be restored to him." So the king said to Ziba, "Here, all that belongs to Mephibosheth is yours." And Ziba said, "I humbly bow before you, that I might find favor in your sight, my lord, O king." He didn't give him the throne, but he gave him everything that belonged to the father that he had. Now when King David came to Bahurim, there was a man from the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei. This was a distant relative of Saul, the son of Gera, coming from there. He came out cursing continuously as he came. You ever had anybody do that to you? The word cursing, kalal in Hebrew, actually means to make light of somebody. He wasn't swearing. He was putting David down. Now he's talking to the king, right? And he's putting him down. He's belittling him. That's what the word cursing means. He was cursing him continuously as he came. So he's walking towards him. And he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David. And all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. Also Shimei said thus when he cursed, "Come out, come out, you bloodthirsty man, you rogue. The Lord has brought upon you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom, your son. So now you are caught in your own evil because you are a bloodthirsty man." He's talking to the king this way. He's saying this is God's judgment on you. Absalom, your son, has taken the throne because of what you did to Saul's household. And so you can see that Mephibosheth has been waiting to take over. Saul's relatives have never let go. And they've held David responsible for everything that happened to Saul, even though David was innocent. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, "Why should this dead dog curse my lord the king?" So he sees him as a dead dog already. He's just a dog, and he sees him as dead. "Please let me go over and take off his head." But the king says, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord has said to him, 'Curse David.' Who then shall say, 'Why have you done so?'" Now this is fascinating. This plunges us to the depths of wisdom. You know what David says? First of all, you remember when they were coming out of the city, David sends people back, says, "Why don't you go back?" He sends the ark back. He sends the priest back. He tells some people to go back, but yet they're loyal. They say, "We're not going back. We're sticking with you." So he says, "Okay, let's go." And they crossed over the river Kidron. But now, here comes this man cursing him continuously, throwing rocks at him. And Abiathar, who is Joab, the commander's brother, Abiathar says, let me lift off his head. And David says, why? What if God has sent him to curse me? How can anybody say, why have you done it this way? Because he says, it's happened, so obviously God let it happen. If God didn't want it to happen, he would have stopped him. Let him curse. And David said to Abishai and all his servants, see how my son who came from my own body seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite? Let him alone and let him curse, for so the Lord has ordered him. He has seen it as being from the Lord. Everything that comes my way, David says, is from the Lord, whether a person is good to me or evil towards me. It kind of reminds you of the words of Job. Remember when Job became ill and Satan began to attack his family and began to attack his health? And Job's wife came to him and said, curse God and die. Good counsel, huh? Curse God and die. And Job said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speak. Shall we not receive from the Lord both good and adversity? And it was kind of interesting that the Bible says that Job with his lips did not sin against God by speaking against him when evil happened. He says when adversity strikes, I mean, we receive both from the Lord, both good and adversity. That's just the way it is. It's from the Lord. It may be that the Lord, verse 12, will look on my affliction, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day. It is interesting that David says, maybe the Lord will look at my affliction, at the way he's treating me, and God will bless me because of his cursing. And as David and his men went along the road, Shimei went along the hillside opposite him, and cursed as he went, threw stones at him, and kicked up dust. This guy was crazy and acting crazy. And David says, oh well, it's from the Lord. Let him be. Maybe the Lord will see my affliction. It's kind of interesting, isn't it, that David would say, you know, the Lord helps the afflicted. And if you're not being afflicted, and when you become afflicted, maybe you ought to rejoice in it and say, hey, now that I'm being afflicted, now I can experience the grace of God. Because if I'm not being afflicted, then I don't experience it. Well, this is great. Kind of reminds you what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 12 when he prayed three times for the Lord to deliver him from the messenger of Satan, which was buffeting his flesh. And the Lord said, no, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in your weakness. And so then Paul says, well, okay, cancel the prayer. I take pleasure in my persecutions and my hardships. For when I am weak, then I am strong. So Paul says, I see that trials and tribulations are necessary to make me weak. Because when I'm weak, then I experience the strength of God. But see, when I'm not weak, I don't experience the strength of God. So trials and tribulations are to make you weak. That's what David is saying. That now that I'm being afflicted, I'm not in my palace taking naps in the afternoon and walking on the palace roof in my luxury. He sees now, he says, oh, you don't know how much I cherished when I was a fugitive, crying out in my affliction and experiencing the grace of God. He knows how to do this. This is right where David belongs. Verse 14, now the king and all the people who were with him became weary, so they refreshed themselves there. Meanwhile, Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel was with him. Remember, Ahithophel was David's chief counsel. And so it was that when Hushai, the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, that Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king! Long live the king! He's saying this to Absalom. Okay? So what he's actually planted there. He's actually David's friend. He's actually going to be the insider, like a spy. And he says to Absalom exactly what Absalom wants to hear. So Absalom said to Hushai, "Is this your loyalty to your friend?" Speaking of David. "Why did you not go with your friend?" And Hushai said to Absalom, "No, but whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel choose, his I will be, and with him I will remain. Furthermore, whom should I serve? Should I not serve in the presence of his son? As I have served in your father's presence, so will I be in your presence." And basically what he's saying is, look, all I do is serve the king. And since your father has vacated, you think that I should be with him because I'm his friend? Nah, come on, you know. I serve who's ever king, and if you're the people's choice, then I'm here to serve you. Boy, Absalom. Absalom got fooled in his own trap. Absalom, the smooth manipulator, he's kind of sitting there going, good, thank you. Long live the king, attaboy, you know. Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, "Give advice as to what we should do." And Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Go in your father's into your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house." Remember, he left 10 behind. "And all Israel will hear that you are abhorred by your father. Then the hands of all who are with you will be strong." So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the top of the house, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all of Israel. That's in the fulfillment of chapter 12, verse 11. Remember Nathan the prophet said that your wives will be taken. Your women are going to be taken in adultery, in openly, in public. You did your adultery in secret, but your wives are going to be taken in public. Well, here's his own son going into his father's concubines, which is forbidden, humiliating his father. And he's letting all of Israel, by doing this, he's saying, look who I am. My father's concubines are now mine. I'm the king. "Now the advice of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was as if one had inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the advice of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom." And so he's a very wise man. And he was giving advice. And next week when we take chapter 17 and 18, we're going to see that the tide is going to turn. By the time we get to chapter 19, David is going to return to Jerusalem and be back on the throne. And Absalom, his son, will be defeated. And so we see the actual word of God being accomplished in David's life. He's on the run again. His son's out to get him. He can't even trust his own family. One son kills another son. One son commits immorality, sexual immorality with his half-sister. We see his concubines, his son going into his concubines openly and publicly before all of Israel so that they could see it and humiliate his father, and by doing so, by saying, "I'm taking over all the possessions of my dad. I'm the king here." But we're going to see some of this advice next week in chapters 17 and 18. See how all of this turns out. But I'm very impressed with David. There's a part about him, he is suffering the consequences for not disciplining, especially Absalom. He was taken in because of his heart bleed for his son. Joab wanted him back. Of course, Joab has changed his mind by now. Joab, once he burned Joab's fields down, he said, "This guy is not good." And Absalom never changed. He was always the same. Good-looking, politician, smooth talker, but very evil. And he manipulated the people to become part of his own. And so David submitted to it. He says, "Whatever I get, if somebody curses me, if somebody kicks dust at me, if somebody throws stones at me, then it's from the Lord." And I pray that God will take care of this person. But secondly, that in my affliction, that God's grace would have favor on me, and that God would bless me, and that God would minister to me. And he submits to the entire process. He doesn't retaliate with anybody. And yet there are times when David takes people's lives. He kills them or has them killed as a just act of judgment. But for revenge, because of something they're personally doing to him, he receives it. He says, let it be from God. It's all from the Lord. Everything is from God, no matter what it is. And David is just trusting. He's receiving it as a judgment from God, but he's also receiving it as saying, but God is going to deliver me and he's going to take care of the whole situation. And next week we'll see how that works out in chapters 17 and 18. Kind of convicts you of how we respond to our circumstances and how we respond to other people when they come up against us. As we've said many times, I don't know if it's been said publicly, but we've kind of joked around with ourselves. I personally am a hands-on person. I'm Abiathar. Give me the sword. The person's a dead dog. As they live, they're dead. Just give me the sword and I'll take off their head, you know. David, he's a hands-on person too. He's a warrior. But he says, look, let the Lord take care of it. Receive it as being from the Lord. Allow the affliction to drive you to seek the Lord, because the Lord will bless you when other people are afflicting you. Let the Lord work things out. That doesn't mean that you're never going to war with people. But what it does mean is that there's no retaliation. It's trusting the Lord and receiving everything, both good and adversity, as being from the Lord, as his humbling process. And David saw that. God took him from the palace roof and took him right back to being a fugitive again, crying and weeping as he went, so that in his affliction he could experience God's grace once again instead of the luxury of sin. Tremendous lesson to see as we test and see our own reactions to how people treat us and how we react to how people treat us, and to see a man who is after God's own heart, even though he has sinned and he has repented and God has forgiven him, just like what we do. Yet you can see a man who's after God's heart. I only want what God wants. And if this is what God wants for me, if this is the consequences for my sin, so be it. Let's close with prayer.